If you're snacking on anything but tasty cake, you're making a huge Miss Cake. A fistful of chocolate-covered raisins? Miss Cake. A spoonful of peanut butter? Bigger Miss Cake. Or the worst Miss Cake of all, your kid's Halloween candy, and it's April. If it's not tasty cake, it's a Miss Cake. Because nothing satisfies like a perfectly sweet butterscotch crimpet or rich and creamy chocolate peanut butter candy cake. Tasty cake. Accept no substitutes.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. The Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got Coming Around Again with Billboard.com Senior Associate Editor Andrew Unterberger. And it's one of three Pop Shop shows this week focusing on all things Taylor Swift. Andrew will be going deep into Swift's catalog alongside Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital Joe Lynch and Billboard's Editorial Director Jason Lipschitz. The guys chat about each of Swift's six albums, including her latest, Reputation, as well as some of their biggest Taylor-related memories, and whether or not they can separate Taylor the songwriter from Taylor the pop star. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/billboardpodcasts. So we talk about some of the Taylor-related memories that we're going to get into just in a second on Coming Around Again. Here's my Taylor-related memory. I have sort of one really good vivid one. It was backstage at the American Music Awards, probably in 2013 maybe? I want to say, yeah, 12 or 13. And I had a sit-down interview with Taylor. Granted, it was all about like 3 or 4 minutes long. But I remember just sort of being bowled over by how like lovely and friendly and funny that she was, and we made jokes. I had terrible puns, and she called me out on them, and she complimented my tie tack and my glittery shoelaces. So it was lovely, and I felt like I had a tiny bit of scoop, maybe, where she. She talked a little bit about her album the album that she was working on at the time that would come out like a full year later. I mean, I think that was the 1989 album, I believe. I could be wrong. I'm kind of misremembering this as I go, but yeah, it was great and she was lovely, and I would love to have her back on the Pop Shop again. So Taylor, if you're listening, feel free to call me and we'll get you on the show like that. Anyway, so let's talk all things Taylor Swift on Coming Around Again.
Hello, and welcome to what is not quite a Coming Around Again podcast. No real anniversary to celebrate this week, but since it's Taylor Swift day, week, month here at Billboard, I figured have a couple special guests on to go deep on the back catalog. So we got Jason Lipschitz and Joe Lynch from the Must Hear Music podcast.
Wow. Hello. What's up?
How's your Taylor Swift day going so far, guys?
It's going very good. Exciting.
Sure.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, Reputation.
I was worried that this album would be a mess, and I think it's pretty fantastic.
So you guys were both at Billboard when 1989 came out, right?
Yeah.
Oh yes. Yeah.
So how does this day compare to that day in terms of just general craziness or volume of posts?
It's about the same, I would say.
I think this is a little easier. I think that one things were a little more chaotic, and we've smoothed things out. We're a well-oiled machine at this point.
No doubt.
But it's not our first rodeo.
It's funny. I ran into a coworker of ours like in the office today, and like she had just gotten some like big personal news that I didn't know about, and so she was like, "Oh yeah, it's a big day," and I was like, "Yeah, Taylor Swift album." She's like, "No, actually," but like, yeah, I just assume that for everybody, this is like the national holiday that it is for us.
Yeah, it's fun. It's honestly fun because we're so removed from the era of like waiting in line at the CD store for the new release.
Sure.
That like when this rare occasion happens where like it's kind of like the monoculture, everybody's mm-hmm. kind of listening to the same album. It's fun. Like it just doesn't really happen that often.
Yeah, yeah, and you don't see as much with the long buildups as you used to. Certainly, like so often it's like, oh my god, this album just came out, or this album is coming out in 3 days, and we need to just kind of panically address it. But here we got a little time to work up to it. We got to get our ducks in order, ducks in a row.
Yeah,
those two. So I wanted to have you guys on to kind of, you know, do a run through Taylor Swift's back catalog. We had 5 great essays that went up this week.
Yeah, congrats to you and congrats to all the writers on that.
Yeah,
those were fantastic.
I was a big fan of those. So if you haven't checked those out, we had one writer each arguing about the 5 albums being her best from the self-titled up until 1989. And who knows if Reputation will be able to make one of those arguments one of those days. But yeah.
One bone I had to pick with that is that you ignored her Christmas album.
That's true. Would you like to make the argument right now,
Julian? That's her finest release.
Easily. Yeah. What's that? There's like some really religious songs on there too, which was really interesting to hear from Taylor.
I got to be honest, I've never heard that full album. Yeah, so.
Me neither, honestly.
Yeah, you're not coming correct with the Taylor Swift.
I know. It's not on, like, is it on iTunes still? Like, I don't think it is.
I don't think so.
It's definitely not on streaming. It's very difficult.
Certainly
to
not
to.
On streaming. Yeah, I think it's a tough one to track down. Yeah. But
we can go further on the Christmas album in a minute. But before we get into the proper albums, I just wanted to kind of ask you guys, like, how are you feeling about Taylor Swift these days? I mean, not even talking about the new album or the new songs, but just, you know, it's kind of a low point for her in her kind of media tenure. You know, she had a very, very long ascent in terms of public approval, and then the bottom kind of fell out for her. And now it seems like everything she does, people want to jump on her for it, sometimes rightly, sometimes maybe less so. So what's the temperature for you guys on Taylor these days?
Go ahead, Joe.
I saw a great tweet from, I don't remember who, so... Shout out to whoever, whoever's tweet that I'm going
to
paraphrase. Shout out to Twitter for good ideas. I saw a great tweet that was like, this is like maybe the first album, which is probably not true, but to benefit from like reverse backlash. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think as you know, high as expectations were for sales, I think expectations for quality of the album were very low, even among fans.
Yeah, safe to say.
And I think the fact that it's, I think it's great, but even if you're not like a stand for the album, like there's no way you're going to listen to it and be like, ooh, what a clunker. Like it's a solid album. Like, and so I think in that sense, kind of, I mean, maybe she played her expectations. I don't know. Like she's a master.
I mean, I think it helps the fact that like, the backlash she received wasn't for anything really that serious. Like, and we kind of wrote about this when Look What You Made Me Do came out, and she was kind of assuming like a little bit of a villain role. And it's like, you think about it, like, all right, like she might have been disingenuous in like, as revealed in on Snapchat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She didn't tell us who she voted for. Like at the end of the day, it wasn't any like crimes or like really like, hateful speech or anything. Yeah. Like
we're certainly seeing people get canceled for a lot worse these days.
Right. Yeah, especially now. Yeah, especially in 2017. So pretty tame stuff overall. So obviously I think that a lot of this album and a lot of her past year has been kind of figuring out how to recover from that mild backlash, because it's really the first that she's ever faced.
Mm-hmm.
I think that with 1989, people were a little... more tired of Taylor, just because it had been an album every 2 years and it was kind of pristine all the time. There were no like false movements. And one of the things I really like about this album is that it's kind of leaning into, you know, I wrote about this today, kind of leaning into those flaws. It's like, it's definitely a self-examination. And I think that's kind of what we needed to hear. Like it's both lyrically, she's kind of owning her messiness, and like, musically the album's kind of messy, and I like that. Mm-hmm. So
I had an editor, I think in late 2014 or early 2015, that just said to me once, like totally unprompted, like, man, I just want to see Taylor lose.
Yeah,
like, I just want to see her take an L. Like,
yeah,
and that was kind of the sentiment at the time. It was just like, yeah, 1989 had been such a mass moment, and it lasted for so long, and the acclaim was getting a little overwhelming. I think people really wanted maybe not an excuse to hate her, but at least like a reason to kind of.
I think people always want to see someone fail.
Yeah,
like, and it's just the way humans work.
And like justification for kind of being sick of her in general, I think. And they've certainly got that in the 2 years.
I agree, but I don't think it's about wanting everyone to fail. I think it's wanting that archetype to fail of like the perfect like queen bee, like everything's kind of come easy, like. picture perfect image. I mean, people don't want to see Adele fail, but Adele is like earthy. Brassy and earthy and like, but I think that the fact that Taylor was so buttoned up, and on this album she's not, like, on in a really genuine way. I don't know.
Yeah, and like the thing that I was talking about with our co-writer Nick earlier today was that, like, with Taylor, it's always about reconciling kind of the two versions of her, and that's Taylor Swift the songwriter and Taylor Swift the pop star.
Yeah.
And Taylor Swift the songwriter is perfect. Yeah. I mean, maybe not always, but, like, generally speaking, she's a 10 out of 10 as a songwriter.
Yep.
Like, if that was all people knew of her, she would still be a star, a legend of some sort.
Yeah.
But as a pop star, she's very imperfect.
Yeah.
And, like, she makes a lot of wrong moves, and she does a lot of things that, you know, end up, it seems like she's kind of crafting the perfect narrative for herself, but she doesn't quite understand the full scope of it, and it ends up kind of coming back to bite her. And so, like, what we've gotten a lot of the last 2 years is Taylor Swift, the imperfect pop star.
Yeah.
And I think people just needed to get Taylor Swift, the songwriter, again. And I think that she did that with this album, but we can talk more about that, you know, later on this discussion. Right now, I want to kind of take it back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift, first album, 2006. What was the first song you guys remember hearing from this album, from Taylor Swift in general?
Oh, I didn't know this album until after Fearless came out.
Oh, really?
Same.
Yeah.
I caught wind of, I mean, I was aware of the name, but not being a country person, I didn't start listening to her until Fearless. And then I think maybe Picture to Burn or Teardrops on My Guitar was the first one from this album that I became aware of. And I watched the videos and I was like, it's a little extra, but I kind of like that about it.
This was definitely, like, the last time she wasn't unavoidable was on this album.
Yes.
It had hits, like, top 20 hits on the Hot 100 and, you know, big country hits, but definitely nothing on the level of what would happen in the albums to come. I remember downloading Tim McGraw for the first time when that, like, it was a little bit after it was popular, but, like, I saw its name, I thought it was interesting, and, like, you know, I wouldn't have been able to predict that she was going to become the biggest pop star in the world, but you can tell pretty quickly there's something different about her. Like, there's just a little bit more detail. There's a little bit more shading. The songs just kind of, they just go a little bit further than your average country song. And I wasn't quite, like, hooked from the beginning, but I was like, all right, it's like you kind of tab it. It's like, oh, I'll come back to her.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't anticipate the next 10 years from that point. But so presumably you guys have heard the album since then. How does it hold up for you?
It's kind of, you know, talking about Adele, it's kind of her 19, where it's just like she's kind of feeling her way. There are some standout singles, but at the same time, it's just like there's some filler on that album. Somebody obviously wrote about how it's her best. I think that it would be hard to say that it's her best after what she's done as an albums artist afterward. I think that it kind of sounds like she had a couple singles and needed to have some window dressing around it and put it out, but yeah
I think that's fairly accurate. I mean, I think, but also when you keep in mind that she was like 16 at the time, it kind of like forgives all those things. You're kind of like, all right, like if a 16-year-old can do this, and like what you're saying, like the incredible attention to lyrical detail that like really brings you into these very particular scenarios, like in that sense it's very impressive.
Shout out to as our one of our chart managers Alex Vitoulis will tell you, young Taylor Swift came into Billboard's office in either 2006 or 2007, performed in our cafeteria in our old office.
You had a cafeteria? Yeah, what?
It was it was smaller than our cafeteria now.
It's just Italian Dunkers every day.
Basically.
Yeah, what was like the best item, like the go-to item at the cafeteria?
It just like, I don't know, it just like had like fish a vending sticks. Machine. Legit, like Taylor Swift 1000% like performed in front of our vending machine in 2006,
cool.
2007.
Funny.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, yeah, there were definitely artist performances in that area.
That was kind of what Broker, right?
Yeah, that was it.
That was the first
people saw
it.
Yeah. If you can perform in this cafeteria, you can perform anywhere.
The vending machine sessions.
Yeah.
Those are the days. I mean, I mostly agree with you guys. I listening to it again recently, I'm a little bit more charitable towards the second half of the album, the kind of non-singles half of it. And I love that actually Our Song, which was the biggest hit off the album, is the last track on the album.
Yeah.
I forget about. But it's interesting to hear, you know, this was obviously her most country album. And it's interesting to hear the way she kind of leans into her countryness in ways that she wouldn't from any point after that.
Yep.
Like you mentioned Picture to Burn. There's like one point where she's like, She talks about, like, going out with all of your best friends.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like,
she's
wow.
She's kind of putting on an affectation there. I mean,
and I don't know. Do you remember the problematic lyric on that song that, like, she had to remove from it?
I definitely remember that. Yeah.
I do not.
It was, I'll tell everyone you're gay.
Yeah.
Then what did she change it to?
I think it's just, like, oh, and by the way, or, like.
Something like that.
Hear
wow.
me say. It definitely scrubs that one.
I forget. How did they change it, though? They didn't, like, pull the CD. Did they just change it for, like, streaming?
I don't remember what they did with the actual physical copy of it. Certainly. Like, I guarantee you can go to the far ends of the internet and not be able to find the original version of that song.
Wow. Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, definitely, like, a digitally removed part of the Taylor Swift story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she had some early missteps along those lines. And I remember, like, someone asked her about being a feminist, and she said that she wasn't. And,
right,
you know,
yeah.
It's a lot of stuff that, like, once she became kind of unavoidable in our world, like, came back to, you know, was recirculated.
Yeah.
And people kind of used it as a case against her. But, you know, again, 16 years old.
Right, I mean, she's a kid. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't want to be held to anything I said when I was 16.
Yeah. So, we don't have to dwell on the album much further than that. We can move on to Fearless, which was kind of her you know, coming out album on the big stage.
It really is crazy that won Album of the Year at the Grammys.
I do think that's insane. Like,
insane because it didn't deserve it, or just
because
she was
it
so
didn't
young?
Deserve it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I think it's because of how young she was and at the point she was at in her career. It's just like, she, like,
I mean, both, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, that's just wild. Like, that just doesn't really happen.
Well, you actually might remember this. Like, do you what was she up against? Who was the favorite going in that year?
Oh,
do you have any sort of memory about that?
Man, I'm kind of blanking. I think the year before, like, the Eminem and Lady Antebellum. Nah, maybe that was 2 years before.
Yeah, I got nothing either. I remember watching those Grammys, but I do not remember what she
was
up against.
Let's look it up. Right, Joe, you got it?
No, I'm actually looking at the track list now, but I can look it up.
I got it.
This is fascinating. But,
no, I do remember watching the ceremony, and she performed.
Was that the Rhiannon year?
Rhiannon, with Stevie Nicks.
I really liked that performance. Actually, got a little bit of flack, but. This was sort of the birth of award show Taylor in general. Like, you know, she wins the Grammy for Album of the Year, and she's basically at every award show that year. And, you know, she's
the famous surprise face.
Yeah, the Taylor Swift surprise face definitely becomes kind of an early point of mockery for Taylor Swift.
Okay, are you guys ready?
Mm-hmm. Ready for it?
I forget. Yeah, so the one I thought was going to win, so Fearless won 2010. The one I thought was going to win was the Dave Matthews Band album, Big Whiskey and the Gru Grux King.
Wow. God.
Yeah. So the reason I thought that was going to win was that was the sentimental favorite because one of the members had passed away before the nomination, and the Grammys loved giving that stuff. So the commercial, the two commercial ones, actually the three others were really big commercial pop hits. The END by the Black Eyed Peas.
Sure.
Wow.
The Energy Never Dies, of course, for those who aren't familiar with their Black Eyed Peas acronyms. I Am Sasha Fierce from Beyonce. And Lady Gaga, The Fame, which is not a good album.
Not particularly.
But come on.
It's got some jams, but it's not.
It's definitely got some jams, but like
for
album of the year.
Yeah, it's not album of
like,
the
year. Like, come on.
Yeah, I'm fine with Fearless winning from that competition.
I don't know. Sasha Fierce can be long, but I think it's a stronger album.
That's probably my least favorite Beyonce album.
No, you guys are crazy.
I would say Fearless is probably the best of those five.
No, I think not, well, not like dissing it, but I really do like a lot of the songs on Fearless, but I do think there's also a good deal of filler on it.
Oh, so obviously, like the first really huge Taylor Swift songs are on this album. Love Story, You Belong With Me
was like so unavoidable. I mean, and that was like... 100. I don't know what it was with that song or that video, but like that was where like she made that crossover into like adults started listening to her and not just teens,
for
and
sure.
Like the gay audience like got wind of it and like latched onto
that
song.
Who is this Taylor Swift?
Yeah, I don't. It was well, you know, which was odd though, because like it was a country singer, and yet like people were like there for it.
Yeah, but that song, I mean, like it's not a tremendous distance to travel between like Avril Lavigne, Michelle Branch, and You Belong With Me. It's very. Familiar. I mean, there's a little bit of country to it, maybe in the guitars, and I think there was even like a pop version of it that was sent to pop radio, right? Like with you know, maybe a little bit less twang and a little bit more six string.
Yeah,
but,
very Shania.
Yeah, but like that song, that's a dynamite song. Like there's no translation needed to enjoy that song. I don't think.
Yep.
But also, like I do think that this is the first album where she really has some incredible deep cuts as well. Like Hey Steven.
Yeah,
that's one of my, you know, five or six favorite Taylor Swift songs. Hmm. It's kind of like a James Taylor-y sort of singer-songwriter throwback. It was just a very sweet love song, great chorus, great humming, and never been a bad Hay song aside from Hay Soul Sister. But every other Hay song, every other Hay song in history has been fantastic, and that's no exception certainly.
It's an interesting claim. Now I'm like running back through.
I think I've actually already made that claim on this podcast, even during my and Chris's "Hey There, Delilah" podcast.
Oh well, that's so a terrible.
It'd
song.
Be a familiar take. Hey, did an entire podcast good, about yeah, that song. Don't be besmirching the plain white tees on "Coming Around Again," Joe. Come on, even though this isn't officially "Coming Around Again." But Jason, what are some of your favorite lesser known songs on this album?
So I'm looking it up. I mean, I think that definitely like. It's just so hard to overshadow the singles on this album. Like, sure. I think You Belong With Me, I think Love Story. Like, these are just, like, 10 out of 10 songs.
Shout out to 15, too. That's, 15 that's is a great song.
Remarkable.
Yeah, Hey Steven. I mean, White Horse. I really like the last song, Change. I like Forever and Always.
Forever and Always, the first, like, angry breakup Taylor song.
Yeah.
And the first one about a celebrity ex, which yeah. is certainly an important milestone in the Taylor Swift catalog.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think about how, you know, it's almost like black and white to Technicolor, like from Taylor Swift to Fearless to me.
Bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to me that this isn't her most famous album, like by a long shot now. Like, like that album, like it sold like 6 million, obviously won the album of the year, had these two just enormous crossover singles. Probably there's some Taylor Swift fans out there that have never heard this album.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
It's not really like a defining album in her catalog anymore, which is crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It just kind of shows you how big she got afterwards.
But, well, quick important question. If you're doing this album, are we talking the original version or a platinum edition?
Definitely. The platinum edition is insane because it puts the bonus tracks at the beginning of the album.
Yeah. And the platinum edition, yeah.
How does that happen? I didn't even know that.
It makes no sense whatsoever. but obviously, between this album and the next one, another sort of important.
All right.
Another important historical demarcation in the Taylor Swift career arc, the 2009 Video Music Awards.
Of course.
Probably one of the most influential pop culture moments of the century.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to call it like the moon landing of our generation, but certainly it's something that everyone remembers where they were when it happened. Yeah. Where were you
like
guys?
The Kennedy assassination of our generation.
Yeah, close,
really.
Closer to that, really.
So I was with our colleague Chris Payne. I was in our college radio station, and we saw it on Facebook that like Kanye West just interrupted Taylor Swift, and we didn't see it until later. We weren't watching live because. Our college radio show was on Sunday nights.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Missed a lot of stuff. We missed the Super Bowl that year. It's kind of a bummer, but anyway.
But like was it even easy to find video of it back then? Like, cuz MTV was so like precious.
Yeah,
for
it was.
YouTube was going at that point. That was like, what was it, 2009?
Oh, no. YouTube was certainly around, but like I thought like maybe they would get yanked quickly, or like it would be the kind of thing we had to rush to find it before they got a takedown. No?
Yeah, it was I just remember like I definitely did not watch it live. I remember it happening and hearing about it, but yeah, I did not watch it. What about you, Joe?
I think I watched it live, and I honestly, at the time, I was like, oh, that's weird. Like,
that,
I don't
that was
remember.
Exactly my reaction.
I don't remember thinking of it as this, like, cataclysmic event. But then it just, like, in fact, I remember, because I was, you know, like, that was when I was starting to write out in entertainment writing. And I remember just being so surprised that it was, like, still a story, like, a week later. And that was a story, like, a decade later. Like, at the time, I was just like, oh, that was a crazy award show moment.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, this undying thing that, like, people could not stop talking about.
One of the things,
and obviously it's made both of them like go off the deep end.
One of the things I remember very vividly about that week after is that Kanye went on the Jay Leno show, like the Tonight Show.
Wow.
And Jay Leno like really like played hardball with him and was like, do you like his mother had passed away recently, and Jay Leno legit asked him like, do you think your mother would be proud of you that? Like, I swear, like I remember, I was like, whoa,
I don't remember that.
Jay Leno, hard-hitting journalist.
I do remember the president calling him an ass.
Yeah, yes, a jackass.
Jackass,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
yeah. I sort of the same reaction as Joe. I was, also because, like, people forget, and I've made this point more times across more platforms than I can count, but that entire award show was nuts because it also had, like, Lady Gaga's first big performance as a pop superstar, where she had, like, the paparazzi, where she ends up like, bloody
that
and hanging
so
from the
cool.
ceiling. And I was like, that, I think, probably was more remarkable to me at the time than the Kanye thing. And there were a couple other like big things that happened that year, and it was just a crazy year in general. But yeah, like the story lasted forever, mm-hmm. and like suddenly everyone had to have a take on it. It was kind of like the beginning of the take era almost.
Yeah, exactly. That was the beginning of like Twitter time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was right when Twitter started too.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was obviously like a huge moment in Taylor's story. But after that, she rebounds certainly a lot quicker than Kanye does with Speak Now, her third album. It's her first album to sell a million in a week. It's the first album that she wrote entirely by herself, and it's the subject of a long time, long ranging Billboard debate. The Speak Now crew versus the Red crew about what is Taylor Swift's best album.
Yeah, it's not even close. It's definitely Speak Now.
Yeah. So do you want to make the case, Jason?
Joe's shaking his head.
Well, Joe will get his time, but sadly, you have the floor for now.
And incorrectly. So Speak Now is definitely Taylor's least heralded album to me.
Oh, really? That's not true.
It's 1,000% true. I mean, she's had... Her last four albums, three of them have gotten nominated for Album of the Year. One of them did not. It was Speak Now.
Okay.
So you're using the asterisk for the first album, I presume, but, when talking about this.
Yeah, I mean, sure. But also the fact that of the last four albums, this one definitely had the least amount of like big hits. I mean, I guess the biggest hit was Mean. I mean, Mine was the highest charting hit. Yeah, but I don't think anyone would say that Mine is one of her 10 biggest songs, maybe.
Not at this point, probably. But that was big. Back to December was pretty big.
Yeah.
Mean
is one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah. Like, I think that's definitely the one that has stuck around the longest in terms of the kind of like pop culture relevance.
Probably
but,
true.
Yeah, I just don't think in terms of the last four albums compared to Fearless, certainly Red, of course, and 1989. I definitely think it's the least heralded, and I think that it's the most cohesive, and it's just has like that. The first half of the album is perfect. Like it's a perfect album, and I think that if you go from just looking at like you said, Back to December to Dear John, which is obviously like. An incredible takedown right into Mean after that. Like, it's just there. The album has so many highs, and it's just so like digestible in a sense of like, you know, there's moments where it kind of sounds like a pop punk album a little bit. Then there's songs like kind of twangy. Then there's like the ballads and the up-tempo like pop rocks. Like, I don't know. I'm all about it.
It's almost like structured like a live set to me, where like it kind of flows in like quadrants almost, where like the first quarter is like the singles, the second quarters are like the deeper cuts, and then she kind of has like her little genre exercises. Yeah. And then like the last couple songs are just these kind of anthemic ballads. I love Last Kiss, by the way. Like when I was listening to the album recently, like it occurred to me that like the best thing that album does is that it makes you forget that Last Kiss is coming as the second to last track.
Yeah.
And it's just a heartbreaking song.
Yeah.
And Dear John, of course, like that was the song that like the first time I heard it, I was like, you know, I'd always liked Taylor Swift, and I thought she was a great pop star. But like that was like the song that made me realize like this is just one of the greatest songwriters that we have going right now.
Yeah.
Like every phrase is so pointed. It's the best diss track since Takeover.
Have you ever done that song at karaoke? I've never done Dear John at karaoke. I bet it'd be really fun.
What karaoke place even has Dear John?
Let's find it. That'd be really fun.
So Joe, you are not
yeah,
as
so
this
as the
album.
Hater.
No, I hate. I was shaking my head because I prefer Red, but no, I really like. I agree with everything you said about the album. I love the album. In terms of like. You know, this was the point where I like really regarded her as like an artist versus just like a famous musician who like makes some good tunes. You know, it's incredible. Like, I remember she had always talked about how she loved Joni Mitchell, and I was around the Fearless time. I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a little skeptical.
But this 100% like, you know, reveals that like the beauty of the songs. You know, they're like very toned down and stark, and you know, it really focuses on her songwriting, which is at an all time high. You know, probably even to this day, like it's probably her best written album, although Innocent is embarrassing lyrically.
Yeah.
We were just talking about that. That is definitely the worst song on this album.
A little bit of an asterisk for Innocent, which is unfortunate. It's still a very pretty song. Like the backing vocals are very like sighing and angelic, and then that's nice. And like the melodically, it's kind of flawless, but the lyrics are very condescending.
Just a little. I mean, it's just she's young, and it's a very like petty, like needless diss track. But no, I think it's beautiful. I think it's great. Sparks Fly, Back to December are wonderful. Mm. I adore Mine and Mean, but it's a little too much of the same thing, a little maudlin, which is why I prefer Red, because there's just a little more emotional variety and sonic variety, even though I do think Red has a good amount of filler. So I can see the case for Speak Now, certainly.
And it's interesting because, like, I think authorship has sort of been decentralized as an important thing, especially in pop circles, where it's almost like an archaic thing to be like, oh, well, you know, she wrote all the songs herself. And you don't want to get too hung up on that. But you really do hear like what a powerful and personal thing it is when you do hear like one of these incredible pop stars do an album written entirely by themselves. And
yeah,
we've obviously gotten a little bit away from that with Taylor Swift, mm-hmm. with the albums that have come out since then. And, you know, they're still personal and they're still, you know, meaningful, but it's just not quite the same. And I think that's probably why there is a subset of fans like Jason and myself that really latch onto this as like the definitive Taylor Swift album.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, I feel like, my most pretentious self when I'm just like, actually, guys,
yeah, it's definitely
the one without the big hits, Speak Now, her best by far. But that is really how I feel.
Yeah, and I also want to talk a little bit about the tour that accompanied this album, because this was the first one where she started doing the thing where like every city she goes to, she brings out another local musician from that city that like means something to her.
Yeah.
So like, you know, She brought out Jimmy Eat World at her Arizona show, and the one I saw her at, this is actually the first time I saw Taylor Swift live, was she brought out Johnny Resnick of the Goo Goo Dolls to play Iris. It's like all of New York, she chooses Johnny Resnick. That's fine though. I mean, like it was very personal to her. And it also just kind of showed, like, it was one of my...
She was going to bring up, like, the New York Dolls.
Yeah, or, like, Ghost of Frank Sinatra, crisis. Who knows, you know.
She brings up, like, TV on the radio.
Could have been, but I was fine with the Goo Goo Dolls. I love, you know, shout out to Johnny Resnick. But, you know, it's one of my favorite things about Taylor is that she is a huge music fan and a huge pop nerd. And her, you know, she also brought out, like, Nelly in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she brought out, I can't remember if it was on this tour, but like she would bring out Carly Simon. Like she could cross genres, she could cross generations. Like she was very, she's very much like a pop acolyte, and she's very studied, but not in a way that makes her feel too like brainy or cerebral about it. It's a very authentic kind of love for music. And even like, you know, when she would sing along to whatever song was being played at an award show that she was at, you'd see her in the audience dancing with Selena Gomez or whatever. Like that's like one of my favorite Taylors. And also around this time that she shouts out Nicki Minaj's Super Bass in a radio interview and basically, like, takes that song into the stratosphere.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, that's a thing that I think she doesn't personally necessarily get enough credit for. Have you guys ever seen her live, or did you see her on this tour? Or?
I saw her. She actually played there was, like, this fan event. The day the album came out, she played a fan event in New York. It was just, like, her and a bunch of, like, squealing fans.
Sure.
So I saw her then, and then I saw her on the 1989 tour. Those are the only times I've seen her, sadly. Oh, I guess I've seen her at the Jingle Ball.
Sure, yeah.
And, like, I think iHeartRadio Fest, but I think that might be it.
And what about you, Jeff?
I've never seen her live, actually.
Wow.
Which I
Joseph.
Liked Remedy, but, you know, people always claim those Billboard tickets.
They're in demand.
These things are expensive.
Yeah,
that's
certainly true.
It's a hard time dropping that much money on a concert.
Well. Anyway, so if this was like a relatively minor album for her chart-wise, and by the way, still sells a million in a week and goes four times platinum, has several top 10 hits. It's certainly, if this is like as big of a dip as she gets, she's still doing fine.
And
but,
it was totally acclaimed too.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, hardly under the radar.
But anyway, her next album she sees her going kind of full-fledged into the pop world. You know, she'd always been, at least a foot in pop. You know, certainly not unfamiliar terrain for her. But this time she's actually working with Max Martin and Shellback and Jeff Basker and Dan Wilson and people like that. And that's on Red, which is her fourth album. So I guess, Joe, I'll give you the floor now to make your case for Red as her defining masterpiece.
I mean, masterpiece is maybe, I don't know if the word I would use, but I just think it's like the defining Taylor Swift album, because I think like to me, like defining Taylor Swift needs the singer-songwriter, it needs the pop, it needs like a little bit of outrageous like dance to the point where you're like, oh, you maybe aren't totally comfortable doing this kind of song, but like
it needs 22 is what you're saying.
I like that you're trying it, and yeah, like the bass drop on We're Never Getting Back Together.
I knew you were trouble.
Yeah, I knew you were trouble. Like again, like maybe it's a little too much for a Taylor Swift song, but I like that she's taking those risks and being a little like, you know, getting out of her comfort zone. But I also do think it just has some of her best songs, like State of Grace is gorgeous. It's such an incredible album opener.
Sure.
The title track is maybe my favorite Taylor Swift song. I think the lyrics are just beautiful. That like opening guitar riff is gorgeous.
I can't do the
I love that.
Like that's like I was talking that's about this with
and it's a great hook.
Not to step on your point too much, but I was talking about this with Chris recently. A lot of shout outs to Chris Payne on this podcast.
Chris Payne, yeah, of course.
And we're talking about like how the production on this album I think is like actually dated the most of any of the Taylor Swift albums. And it's kind of moments like that. Like she was definitely leaning into like the EDM era at the peak of that, and like, you know, it's not like there's a ton of songs with like dubstep inflections on this album, but you can definitely hear it, and especially in the big singles, and it definitely takes it back to that moment for me, not necessarily in a bad way, but in like a very conspicuous way.
Yeah,
I think the Red is so light though. She barely leans in. I think it works for me.
It's distracting for me.
Here's my thing about Red. You ready for this, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
I really like it. Obviously, it's a great album. It's definitely a transition album. Like it's
true.
And I think that's why I love it a little bit less, because you're right that she's trying things, but it doesn't, some of those things don't feel fully formed. Like we were talking about how I don't like I Knew You Were Trouble. Like I just don't really like
that song
at all.
You're crazy.
And I think that everything that she does in 1989 is like a refined version of something like I Knew You Were Trouble.
The juxtaposition between the verses and the chorus for "I Knew You Were Trouble," like that gets me. It's really interesting. Like you forget like the way that song starts. It almost starts like a ska song. It's got like kind of a skank to it.
Yeah.
And then yeah, it hits on the chorus with the bass drop. It's not like flawless by any means. And it's interesting to me that kind of became like the big radio hit from this album. Like I meant to mention this at the start of this album, but this album had her first Hot 100 number one hit.
Yeah, that, We Are Never Getting Back Together.
Fantastic song, really fun video.
But like, who talks about that song anymore? Like, I feel
just
like that,
me. Yeah.
I feel like that song's almost gotten like forgotten in this album's overall story. I feel like way more people talk about "I Knew You Were Trouble" or 22 or even "All Too Well," as we were talking about recently. It's kind of one of her definitive deep cuts, and certainly one of my favorite Taylor Swift songs too.
Yeah,
but yeah, like "We Are Never Getting Back Together." That was such a huge song for its moment, and then it feels like it almost evaporated afterwards.
Yeah
I can see that.
It's almost to me like the fact that I Knew You Were Trouble was more extreme in its kind of sound made it more memorable. But yeah, I just think that like there are, it's kind of, and we'll get into Reputation, but like there are in a similar way she's taking a lot of chances on Red, but I think that it's just like, I don't know, it's just like kind of dabbling in different modes, then like some are really great and some of them are like that Snow Patrol guy song.
Yeah, that one's not great.
Totally forgotten about that until I was listening to it again recently. Gary Lightbody, what are you doing on this album?
Yeah, it's just like, and like look, I don't dislike it, but it's just like I think that it kind of taints it for me a little bit.
I think that's a weak track, but I do also think it just has like the most like variety too of her. Yeah. And I think you're right, it's transitional, but I like that it kind of brings all those things together. One thing that was missing on 1989 that I appreciate is back on Reputation is like a sense of her humor, whereas like We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, like, you know, the whole indie record that's much cooler than mine,
she has it out for hipsters on this album, man.
And I love it. A perfect night to dress up like hipsters. I mean, there's a lot of like really like cute soft barbs like thrown at people, and you know, she does goofy voices, like I appreciate that, like it's human in a way that 1989 was like very like
steely.
It was very steely. Yeah, that's a great word for it. Yeah.
I'm curious for your guys' take on one song, because you know, I had never really considered "Holy Ground" that much as like an important song on this album. But then the essay that Sam Lansky wrote for us about Red was a phenomenal essay, and he talks about that being like his favorite Taylor Swift song, and like the kind of the key to the whole album. And I almost wondered if like if that's the song that's like kind of the inflection point on whether or not you're in on Red or not, is if you understand "Holy Ground." So I'm curious where you guys fall on that one.
I can see that. I mean, I think that, I don't know. I think that We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together is almost like the linchpin of that album.
Okay.
Because it kind of comes in the middle. It kind of nods to, you know, the country pop a little bit. I mean, I remember hearing that song. I remember Taylor Swift's publicist came in to the Billboard office in 2012 and was like, "This is gonna blow your mind," and like put it on, and I really liked it. I was like, and I said out loud, I was like, "This sounds like an Avril Lavigne song," and she got
so
offended.
No.
And I meant it as a huge compliment.
Yeah, she doesn't know you as well as we do, Jason.
And she was like, no. But no, I think that it's like that kind of captures the spirit of it a little bit. What do you think of Holy Ground, Joe?
I like Holy Ground a lot. I think it's great. It's not, it's definitely not one of my favorite Taylor Swift songs. I also, reading the essay, I was kind of like, huh. Like, I wouldn't, like, have cited that as, like, the key song from the album. Quick shout out, though, to Begin Again, which I do think is one of the finest,
awesome.
Like, lyrically and musically. Also, just a very, like, adult, mature, beautiful sentiment.
Great choice to hold for the closer, too.
Yes.
Very smart. Yeah. Especially, I don't love this most of the second side of Red that much. That's definitely where the album gets a little watery for me, aside from a couple songs here and there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, it's worth sticking around for that one, certainly.
She has, that song has one of my favorite, like, line deliveries that Taylor Swift's ever done, where she goes, when, like, you pull the chair out, and she's like, you don't know how nice that feels, but she like means it so much. Like she does. You don't know how nice that feels. Man. Anyway.
Yeah. And this is sort of the album where I feel like everyone started paying attention to her. Like even if you were a snobby critic or whether you're a diehard pop fan, country rock, whatever, like everybody had an opinion on Taylor Swift by the time The Red came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the album, you know, I guess it still didn't get reviewed everywhere, but it was certainly like the album where, okay, now Taylor Swift has to be part of the discussion no matter what discussion you're having.
Yeah.
And that certainly rolled into the next album, which was 1989, came out in 2014.
Wait, quick one thing. Do you remember when it was the Grammys and they were announcing Album of the Year and Red was up for Album of the Year and she thought she won for a second because Daft Punk won for Random Access Memories, and they were like, and the winner is Red. And you could like see it in her face, like sort of explode, and then be like, oh, wait, it's not me.
I do not remember that.
Yep.
That's a YouTube clip everyone should look
up. It's a lot easier for Daft Punk to be stoic than Taylor Swift.
Right. Exactly. They hid their reactions really well.
Yeah. But in any event, 1989, full Max Martin experience, her best sales week ever, mm-hmm. best sales week for anybody in over a decade. 3 number one hits on the Hot 100. It basically makes her unquestionably, at least until Adele comes back, makes her unquestionably the biggest pop star in the world.
Yeah.
Is this one of her best albums? Ooh, the silence speaks volumes.
I would probably rank it third.
Okay.
What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I think it's in the middle of her six, I would say. I mean, there's songs I really, really love on it, and I love that she went full pop. But yeah, I mean, some of the filler is very. I mean, I guess I'm saying this about all our albums to a degree, but like, there's some pretty slight filler on it. I mean, like, Stay, 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 like, oof. Honestly, just sounds like a jingle for a commercial.
Yeah, it's like definitely got that kind of iPhone sound to it.
Yeah, it's just a little too much. And yeah, and then there's some where you like look at the track list.
Stay, Stay, Stay on Red?
Oh, was that on Red?
Yeah, that's on Red, guys.
Yeah, wow. Oh, whoops.
Oh, demerits. Demerits for Joe and myself.
You're thinking of All You Have to Do Is Stay.
I am thinking of All You Have to Do Is Stay.
Yeah.
Which, actually, I do like that one. But even, whoops. Just kidding.
Yeah, yeah, like, I agree with you. Like, towards the back. I mean, and it is, I think, sort of fair to say, as you guys both scramble to check the 1989 track list, it is sort of fair to say,
oh, we just have the track list? All right.
All right, there we go. Thank you for pulling that up. I think it is fair to say that she's never had, like, a lean album, that she's never had an album, like, totally devoid of filler. Every one of them, like, around the three-quarters mark, I think starts to get a little bit...
How You Get the Girl is pretty slight.
Ooh, yeah, that's a bad one. I don't like I Know Places that much.
Yeah.
This
honestly,
is
I don't like Bad Blood. Like, I think that's not a great song.
The lyrics on that are pretty terrible.
But on the good, you know, there are, like, now that we've, you know, torn it apart.
that sucks.
I think Wildest Dreams is one of her best written, like, most just, like, really subdued, beautiful production. Style, like, if she had pushed for that, like, that easily could have been a number one. Yeah. Like, I feel like the video was kind of an afterthought. If she had given it a full video and real promo, like, that could have gone number one for sure. Blank Space, like one of her most incisive, like self-aware lyrics. That performance, was it the AMAs or the AMAs? Grammy? Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, remember that? That was awesome.
I'd forgotten how strong this album starts. Like the 1-2-3 of Welcome to New York, Blank Space, and
Style.
Like that's If she had been able to keep that up for a whole album, then yeah. I would say that'd be her best album. But as fellow New Yorkers, will you guys give her Welcome to New York? I know a lot of people will.
Here's the thing: I feel like people unfairly.
Our producer is looking at us very skeptically right now, but I think she doesn't have a microphone in front of her, unfortunately.
People unfairly like if you look at it like, oh, this is an all-time anthem for the city, it's silly. But like if you look at it for, in my sense, what it is, it's like the diary entry of someone who like just arrived at New York. She's really excited about the city, about the possibilities. She's a little naive because she doesn't fully understand what the city is all about yet. Mm-hmm. But like that's a very honest to her experience and honest to a lot of people. Like and that's like kind of what the city is all about. Like people showing up and being like wide-eyed but not fully understanding what's going on, really. And I think if you look at it that way, it's a perfect summation of that.
Yeah, I think it's a great song. Like I think it's really fun, and I think here's the thing about 1989. I think this is definitely her most. I already said that like Speak Now was her most like cohesive album, and I think I should have said consistent because I think that 1989 is her most cohesive album.
Okay.
In the sense of like. There is a current running through this entire album where it's hard to listen to a song on this album and mistake it for existing on another album, even though you did the inverse.
Even though I just did that.
No, you did the inverse of That's mistaking true. A Red song for 19. But like you would never think of like you'd never be like, oh, what album is Style on or Blank Space or
that's a fair point.
New Romantics. Like there, it's all very much of a piece, and I appreciate that.
My favorite thing about this album might not actually be anything on the album itself, but just that like it was that kind of late 80s blockbuster album that spins off a million singles and lasts forever. Like, I don't think the album is actually that authentically 80s sounding.
No, not at all.
Not the way she intends and when she talks about, you know, like Annie Lennox and Madonna.
It doesn't sound anything like that.
Yeah, not really. I mean, and maybe like a little bit of the spirit of it, but what it is the largesse. It's the fact that pop was now playing on that like super stadium level. Where like an album could be number one for 11 weeks, and it could have 3 number one singles and a couple other top tens. Like, I kind of enjoyed living in that moment because you don't get it very often these days.
Can I tell you guys a dirty secret?
Ooh,
I think Out of the Woods might be my favorite song on this album.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that.
I think that's great. I really love that song too.
I think that song
dialed down the Jack Antonoff.
I know, man. Like, look, I really just like it. I think it's definitely the song I return to the most.
It's in my head the most of any song on this album.
Well, but that's almost not a fair fight. I mean, like that song is basically like a mantra. Like you can't really you can't really give that one too many points for getting stuck in there.
Something.
Yeah, fair enough.
Clean.
Yeah, we should mention
beautiful song. Again, it's sort of the begin again trick too. It's like ending it with this sort of like, it's kind of sad but like more vaguely optimistic sort of looking forward. It's beautiful.
Shout out to Imogen Heap.
Yeah, definitely. And I do like that that like on an album with so many hit singles, it both starts and ends with like a deep cut fan favorite. That like you have to actually listen to the album to get to, and I do enjoy that part of it certainly. This is sort of probably the last moment for Taylor as like the universally acclaimed pop star. Because obviously we have Kanye versus Taylor Mach 2.
Was it 2016?
Mm-hmm. I mean, did that change your opinions of Taylor at all? Did you think it was just out of proportion at the time? And we don't have to go too deep on it. But
it was pretty wild to me. Like looking back on it, like
it's crazy that it happened.
Yeah, it's crazy that it's like that. That was always kind of my opinion. Is like, holy crap, what the hell is going on?
Were you up when it happened, or did you wake up to it in the morning?
I was up when it happened. I was actually in Chicago at Pitchfork Fest, so it was very strange that like I spent the day watching like indie bands and then came home to like this huge like pop star feud.
Yeah, mass culture moment.
Yeah. What about you, Joe?
I mean, I don't know. The whole thing honestly annoys me.
Yeah,
like,
it's kind of like this is probably the last time I'm going to bring up this topic.
Like, yeah, in conversation. Just, like, and I, it's really life, just like know? I think the glut of think pieces about it were just like exhausting and like not super revelatory. I mean, I think that the most annoying thing in terms of like if I'm criticizing her is just that like she has this tendency to like never apologize for anything. She's just more of like has explanations and like takes and excuses, and like at some point like I just appreciate someone to be like, you know what, I was sort of misleading, or maybe I didn't give the best impression. I'm sorry. Like, that's something I would enjoy seeing from her. But like, do I think she's like a demon or a snake? I mean, like, I don't know. I also don't care. Like, I mean, if you're like a music fan, like most of the people, like, I mean, maybe like Paul McCartney is the exception, but like most people,
he's got some skeletons in the closet, man. Just you wait about Paul McCartney. The reckoning's coming.
Yeah, he had a chicken nugget once, despite being a vegetarian. Like most people, like are like either like have done bad things or like actually really shitty people. So it's just like this whole like, did she like say something misleading about Kim Kardashian? I'm like, I genuinely don't care. Like, this isn't gonna make me dislike her music. Like, and no, I'm not invested in her as a human anyways. Like, she's not my friend. I'm not gonna like, I don't feel let down or anything.
No, that's all fair. The one thing I will say is that I do think that both Kanye and Taylor are more interesting for the other one's existence because they're both such interesting natural foils for the other one.
Yep. Yes.
Like the most like Bill Simmons thing I've ever written was something I wrote for Spin about comparing the Kanye and Taylor feud with the Shaq and Kobe feud.
Wow.
About how like even though like they just don't speak the same language and they'll never like anytime they ever tried to kind of make nice in public, it always just felt super awkward and uncomfortable. Yes. Because like they come at pop from so completely different ways, you know. Yeah. Kanye is the anarchic kind of like fuck everything up and let's just rebuild it and you know destroy the album format forever. Whereas Taylor's like, okay, let's plan out this album 5 years in advance and like get the strategy down, like start you know marketing it like years and then have everything about the perfect lead up and everything so perfectly curated for her experience. And then the fact that the two of them keep kind of like falling in and out of each other's lives in these really dramatic ways just kind of like it serves to emphasize like just how unique their personalities are in the pop sphere. And it's interesting in a way that I think keeps the feud compelling even as it becomes like oppressively overdramatic.
So you would say right now it's kind of like Kanye is like Shaq in Phoenix?
No, I would actually say that
Taylor just got Pau Gasol, or
yeah, sure. Let's go with that. I've actually more easily draw the comparison between Shaq and Taylor and Kanye and Kobe because Shaq is also very calculating, and he wants everybody to like him. Where Kobe's like, "Fuck it, man! Let's just play basketball. Like that's what matters. Is the art."
Yeah, I saw it as Kobe the perfectionist in terms of like, you know, just caring about stats.
Yeah, anyway. But the other interesting thing is that, like, in both feuds...
We've lost Joe completely.
I'm sorry, Joe. I promise the last point I'm going to make about this. But the other interesting thing is that in both feuds, like, the public perception of it has shifted so many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it seems like one of them is the good guy, one of them is the bad guy, and then it totally switches. And then sometimes it's kind of gray. And, like, it's just really interesting. Like, you don't see feuds like that that aren't just about, like, one petty thing that lasts forever. It's, like, this is really about these are two fundamentally different pop stars trying to occupy the same space, and I find that really interesting.
Yeah.
Before we talk about the new album, I just want to take a quick moment to talk about any favorite, like, non-album tracks or bonus tracks or anything that we haven't talked about yet so far that you want to give an extra shine to.
Oh, Safe and Sound, for sure.
Sure, from the Hunger Games. Yeah.
That's a good song.
Beautiful song, Civil Wars.
Yeah. Represent. Great song.
I don't want to step on your toes, but I do want to say you wrote a really beautiful piece about the song Ronin.
Oh, thank you, Joe.
It was a wonderful essay about that. And it was a song that I'd heard, I think, once and kind of forgot about. But
that song's awesome.
Reading your piece and then listening to it, like, very moving.
Yeah, just some quick background on Ronin for those not familiar. It was a charity single released by Taylor Swift in 2012 about a mother and son. The mother had a blog about her four-year-old son who was dying of cancer and eventually did die of cancer. And she only performed the song once. It was at a Stand Up to Cancer benefit. And she played it once again live when the mother was in the audience in an Arizona show in the 1989 tour. But just a brutal song. And it has the same kind of – it's actually taken from passages on her blog. Like, that's where the lyrics are taken from. But it's still got Taylor's phrasing, and it's just beautifully incisive and just unbelievably heartbreaking. Like, I almost feel bad. Like, I would say go listen to that song because it's a great song, but A, it's really difficult to find because it's not on streaming and not really on YouTube either. And also, it's just like you don't need that song in your life because it will just ruin your day.
Yeah.
It's a brutal, bleak kind of – but it's also very beautiful, and it's an important part of her catalog, even though it's not necessarily a part of her story because she kind of avoided it afterwards. I also wanted to shout out Christmas Is When You Were Mine off of the Joe Lynch approved Taylor Swift Christmas album. Another just heart-wrenching song. And like that album is kind of terrible. Like it's only like five songs. I think there's a couple standards and a couple like super religious originals, and they're not that remarkable. But that's like the most heartbreaking Christmas song since Last Christmas to me, and that's that's one that I really would say that check that one out in time for the holiday season.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm surprised nobody wants to go to bat for New Romantics. I thought that was the...
Well, I think that... I don't know. I like that song more than I do.
Really?
Yeah.
I agree with Jason, but I also like kind of just consider that a 1989 song. Like, okay. It's like kind of like... I don't know. Like, it's just... It's the bonus version. Like, it's part of the album, basically.
Yeah.
The one... I was trying to find the name of it. What was that? Oh, Sweeter Than Fiction is...
Okay, the other... Is it good? Is the other song from that soundtrack?
That's...
No, it's from like a random soundtrack.
Yeah, it's from... That's One Chance, which... Wait, what? I don't...
Yeah, it's, just a, random, it's a random movie, but that was Jack Antonoff and Taylor Swift's first collaboration.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no memory of that. That's interesting. I do want a quick shout-out to Today Was a Fairy Tale, which was actually a
number two
pop hit on the Hot 100, but nobody...
Kind of disappeared.
Yeah, nobody remembers that song. I think it was from an awful soundtrack. I can't remember. It's like,
wasn't it for Valentine's
Day?
Yeah. Which she was covering.
Yeah. Not approval from a producer, yeah. I couldn't remember if it was like Valentine's Day or Mother's Day or
Valentine's Day and The Giver, right? That's
right,
the extent of her film career.
Have you ever seen either of those movies?
I saw The
I've
Giver.
Seen both of her clips from it, and they're just like nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, not like insulting her. She's just in it for like 2 seconds.
You would think that you would think that somebody like as trained at like putting on public faces as Taylor Swift would be a better, or at least like a more prolific actress. Isn't that kind of surprising?
I see her being a really bad actress, honestly. Like,
why?
You've seen her on SNL. Like, she doesn't have the timing. She's like, it's a totally different skill set, honestly. Like, being able to like emote properly. Like, she's like funny in the sense that if you're like in a group of people, I'm sure she's a riot. But like, is she?
You don't want to see her doing stand-up at the Laugh Factory.
Entertaining person to watch, like a room full of people to watch. Like, no. Like,
does do an excellent job playing dual roles in the You Belong With Me video, though. Gotta give her credit for that.
Well, music video acting is a very different animal than feature film acting, as we know from Madonna, who eventually did become quite good, but early on, you know, it was a little rough.
It was a fair point, Joe. I apologize. And so I guess that brings us to the new album. Jason, you wrote our Album of the Week essay for it.
Do
you want to take the lead here?
Sure, yeah. So I heard the album a couple of days before it came out. Yeah, I'm come on.
No big deal.
And I was really surprised at its lyrical focus. Like, this is from Look What You Made Me Do. It really seemed like all of these songs were going to be like Look What You Made Me Do and the other really kind of anti-Kanye, anti-like hater song, which is This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. But the rest of the album really isn't in that vein at all. Like, it's what I wrote about is like, it's more of a romance, or it's almost like a love story, but it's...
Maybe it just say yes.
Yeah, exactly. but it's very much like an adult like love story coming from a 27-year-old who is no longer thinking about like sweeping romance, is more about like finding someone who knows her baggage and like will be okay with that. And you know, there are moments on this album where she's like, this isn't going to last. Like, what do? We continue having fun, or do we say goodbye and be realistic about it? Like, there are a lot of passages on this album that speak to a much more like grounded romance than we're used to with Taylor Swift. Even 1989 had these kind of sweeping songs and sweeping gestures. But also, like, in terms of, we were talking earlier about how this definitely does seem to be of a piece sonically, where she drove the whole album with Max Martin and Jack Antonoff, and the album does kind of form as a piece a little bit less than 1989, but there's definitely a lot of experiments on here, but it there's still like overarching like big synths, big choruses, drum machine, and yeah, I mean, look, I think at the end of the day, it's definitely like I said, her messiest album, but in a way I really appreciate it. I think that she takes a lot of risks on this, and she could have just made another 1989 or another like tweak of 1989. This doesn't really sound like 1989 at all to me. So yeah, I just kind of appreciate it. I feel like this is an album like I'll explore more because of its like rougher edges. So I don't know.
Joe, how are you feeling?
I mean, yeah, I'm all aboard. I think it's a great, I agree with what you said, Jason, you know, and I think kind of what I said earlier, like, I was worried that it would be kind of experimental in a way that didn't work, but I think she hasn't really veered too far out of her comfort zone. I think there's a lot of, I mean, you know, we've talked about her lyrics before. I feel like 1989 was good. Like, I'm not going to criticize the lyrics, but like, I feel like the lyrics are probably stronger on this one. There's just a lot, like, on first listen, there's a lot of imagery that strikes me, like, very specifically. Like, the line in Getaway Car, I knew from the first Old Fashions, we were cursed, is, like, such, like, it takes you, you get a sense of, like, the entire story with that line. And it's such a specific image. You know, it really takes you into the first moments of that relationship. And, yeah, I'm trying, like, Delicate is another, like,
it's my favorite song.
Really? It's a fantastic one.
Yeah. If I was going to say that there are two absolutely perfect songs on this album, do you guys know what they are?
Probably Delicate and Dress.
I was going to say Dress and Gorgeous.
I love Gorgeous. Yeah.
Like, I think that might be a better pop song than anything on 1989. Yeah. I think it's just a flawless
song. The line about, like, stumbling home to my cats alone, and then unless you want to come along, is so great.
And the little ding that kind of serves as a punchline. Yeah. Oh, yes. It's so good.
Again, the humor's back. And I also really like that she's, in a lot of ways, like, becoming more human on this album. Like, so that song starts out with, like, we know in the song that she's dating someone. He's not there, but she's, like, basically trying to cheat on him. Like, and she also takes this role on in other songs where she's kind of like taunting her lover. She's saying, you know, like, I basically admits, like, I've been leading you on this whole time.
She plays the cad, basically.
Yeah. Whereas Taylor of three albums ago would have been furious with that person. Now she's like embracing it and just kind of being like, you know what? This is what adult life is like. Yeah. And I love that about it.
Definitely.
Like, it's very mature, and it's, you know, it's also pretty bold, honestly, for like a pop star, a female pop star, to take that role, like, to acknowledge the kind of like, I'm using another person in a relationship or, you know, sexual sense.
It's the kind of song that, like, any number of male country stars would sing totally straight-faced and unironically.
Yeah.
But she does it with, like, a really obvious wink and, like, the self-referential line about her cats, which is just fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, that song is a knockout. That's a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
But, I do want to talk about Dress for a second, because that song blew my mind. Like, it's not, you know, it's not a revolutionary pop song by any stretch of the imagination. As I wrote something about it today, and I compared it at great length to FKA Twigs' 2 Weeks, which I think it mirrors the structure of and some
All
of
right.
the little songwriting tricks, like, very closely. But she's just so good at it. Yeah. And, like, considering that it's a song that's way more sensual than she's ever really attempted before. You know, she's kind of given you drips and drabs of, like, lustful Taylor over the years. This is the first song where she ever really goes for it, and there's a line like, I'm not even going to get it right at this point, but I bought this dress so you could take it off.
Yeah.
Wore this dress.
Only bought this dress,
One of the two.
Yeah.
And she leans into it. She repeats it. It's the core lyric of the song.
Yeah.
But she has the production to back it up, and every song, just every moment of it just hits just right. I was blown away by it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the interesting thing to me about the way this album's being received so far is that, you know, a lot of people are commenting about how the 4 advanced tracks on the album aren't the best songs, which I think we would all probably agree with at this point.
I would not agree with that.
Really?
I think that's been an overstated.
But before I make my second point, why don't you give me a rebuttal on that one?
Are You Ready for It? I'm Not in Love With. I mean, Gorgeous is one of those first 4 songs, like you said. It's one of the best in the album. Call It What You Want, I think, is in the album's top half. I genuinely love Look What You Made Me Do. Like, I think
I've come around on that song.
Yeah,
too.
I think it's great.
I like it more in the context
of the album. It's got so much attitude, and it's just a great, like, kind of, you know, it's like her coming back and basically being like, fuck you to everyone.
That's fair. And I do have to say that, like, the beginning of Ready For It, like, as the first sound you hear on the album, is just those bass thuds. Like, that's pretty powerful.
And her clearing her throat as, like, the first vocal part in the album
is
kind of genius.
But I mean, that is sort of the narrative that's been pervasive, I think, in the way it's been received. And I do mostly agree with it. I think that Dress is the best song. I think New Year's Day is probably better than a bunch of the advanced tracks. But the interesting thing to me is that people seem, like, angry about it almost. They feel like they were misled,
like,
by Taylor
been hoodwinked.
Swift
yeah.
to have those 4 songs be the advanced tracks. And I don't think, like, her singles have never been the best songs on her albums, I don't think. Or at least not, like, in a way where
not
it's like,
Fearless,
obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, not since Fearless. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I guess I agree with you.
I think that, and we talked about it this morning, it really is like Look What You Made Me Do, which just really threw people off.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, you listen to that, you're like, oh, crap, like, she's going to bring the fire on this one. Like, she's going to name names. And she doesn't really, except for one other song. So that's okay. It's just like, I think that might have thrown people off for sure.
Yeah, and you make this point really well in your essay, and when talking about the album just now, like, it's not what this album was about. And like none of what's come up before this album was what this album was about.
Yeah.
And I was talking with Nick Catucci earlier, and he was saying like, oh, I don't really want to listen to this album. Like I've really gotten tired of Taylor over the last year or so with all the stuff that's gone on before this album, and gone into the marketing promotion of it. And I was trying to say to him, like, listen to this album. I think you'll see that all of that was just marketing.
Yeah.
And that this album stands on its own.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Like, it's getting back to that, like Taylor the songwriter versus Taylor the pop star. We finally have an album of Taylor the songwriter again. And I think it's great. And I think it's one of her best.
Yeah.
All right. Any closing remarks on Taylor Swift, guys? Or wow. I think we've probably gone long enough as is.
I think we're good.
All right.
I'm going to enjoy listening to this album this weekend.
Yeah, me too.
Very much.
Yeah. I said, because of it not being on streaming and because like it only came out at midnight last night, I've only like, listened to it a couple times so far. I'm looking forward to digging into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
All right. Thanks for coming on, guys.
All right. Thanks for having.